Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
I loved my husband dearly, but I admit what few dare to. I'm happier as a widow. It's a fairly strong statement, isn't it, from psychologist, author and speaker Tabby Kerwin, who is with me here on Lunchtime Live today. Tabby, you might just explain to listeners what you mean by that, first of all.
Absolutely. It is a bold statement, and it's certainly one that makes people stop in their tracks. And I always have to caveat it with the fact I'm not happy that my husband is dead, and that is absolutely not what's behind this. But it's the reality that widowhood gave me an opportunity to choose how I feel. And I kind of felt myself in a situation where I could have crumbled, absolutely, like so many people do with grief, because there's no manual, there's no guidebook of how to manage it. Or I could choose happiness without a plan. I didn't know how that worked, but I could just do the things that served me. And really, it gave me permission to cast aside the opinions of other people, because people can be very judgmental. They think there's a certain way you should behave or you should do, whether that's whether you're grieving or not. It just gave me permission to choose what I did and how I wanted to do it without the fear of judgment.
Those perceptions, those kind of judgments you talk about that often Tabby people have, what do you mean by that? Can you give us maybe some examples?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, if we go back historically, there's always been a judgment and a perception. You know, especially women, we should wear black for a certain amount of time. Yeah. We should grieve for, be it a week, a month, a year, whatever was dictated, and usually dictated either culturally, societally, religiously, and also a lot of the time by men as well. There were those judgments. And whilst it's not that we should all wear black veils and, you know, walk around for a year without, you know, considering ourselves at all and behave in the way that's expected, that's not the case now. There is still a judgment and a belief that you perhaps should take a certain amount of time. And the issue is that for some people, you know, and I get this all the time, it's like, don't you think it's been long enough? It's been a couple of months. Mm. Don't you think you should try dating? And other people will go, oh, you're dating. Do you think it's too soon?
Too soon,
but
that you shouldn't or you can't meet somebody for another period of time, or even actually just being out and about or going for a meal or going for drinks with friends, that there is often that kind of public judgment around that.
Absolutely. And you know, laughing. Oh my God, how could you possibly laugh? How could you smile again? Whether it's the day after or 3 years after, there's always judgment that comes with it. And I still get that judgment. So my husband Simon died 7.5 years ago. And now I still get, don't you think you should date? Don't you think you should be with someone else? And I'm at the point, and I haven't dated and I'm not with someone else, because I've become so happy with my own life, with the relationship with myself. And it's the first time in my adult life that I've been, you know, found myself single. But I'm so good with that, that it's really uncomfortable for other people. And that's the issue. It's other people's discomfort that they kind of want to project onto you, because they don't know how they would manage in that situation. And the truth is, you don't know how you're going to manage.
No.
You just know you have to. It comes back to choice. Am I going to manage this with grace and humour and happiness, or am I going to make my life small and limit it?
Tell us a little bit about Simon.
Okay, so Simon, he was an absolute full of life character. He was incredibly talented as a musician, for sure, but he was incredibly kind, and he just had the most outrageous sense of humour as well. And anyone that knows him will always, you know, lead with stories of silly things he did or jokes that he told. And he was an absolute larger than life character, which is why it's so important to me, out of respect to him, to live life so fully, because that's what he would have done. That's what we had planned together. So there was no reason that that should stop.
Had he been sick for a long period of time?
No. So he died in November 2018, but he was actually only became sick in the April. So it was quite a short amount of time. He was
very short.
Yeah, finally diagnosed on the 4th of July with a germ cell tumour. And it took quite a while to diagnose it, because he started with basically a bad back, which was nothing unusual. He'd got pre-existing rugby injuries. He was, you know, at the time, 56 years old. That's very common, you know, to have those niggles in your back and things, because we're essentially just a human game of kaplunk, as in our bodies. But yeah, it started with a bad back. And The issue with it was, is germ cell tumours are actually a form of testicular cancer, but there was no signs of any tumours in that testicular region. And it's also what is termed as a young man's cancer. So usually people 20s, very early 30s. So it was quite unusual for someone at 56 to get it. But once he was diagnosed, the treatment was aggressive, but it was effective. And in fact, all the tumours shrunk so quickly. The nature of chemotherapy is, you know, you become immunosuppressant. So there was lots of infections and things. And essentially, it was the infections that landed him in hospital. Due to one of the treatments that he had, one of the chemotherapies that he had called bleomycin, he wasn't able to have any oxygen therapy. So when he had an infection, his oxygen stats were quite low. They had to find a way to increase his oxygen levels, which was to put him into a induced coma for 48 hours just to give his body a little bit of a rest. And he was perfectly happy with this plan of action, even gave me the thumbs up as he went into this coma because, you know, he was looking forward to the rest. You know, he was tired from all the treatment. He'd undergone around 52 blasts of chemotherapy in 12 weeks. So it was majorly aggressive on his body.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I mean, it's still very raw. My own dad passed away in December 2018. So I still regard it as being very new, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Even though to other people listening, it might seem like some time ago. How did you find dealing with grief? Because we all deal with it in so many different ways, Tabby.
Yeah, it wasn't my first rodeo with grief. So my own dad had died when I was 16 years old. Okay. So I'd kind of lived with this grief for many decades as such. And my brother died in 2014. So I wasn't new to it. But I guess when Simon died, it did make me reflect on how I had grieved, or rather not grieved, when my dad had died, which was a very different experience for me because I went back to boarding school 2 days after he had died. And, there was no support in the early 90s for children living with grief. So it was a very different experience. And I was very conscious that when Simon died, that I had my son, who was 14 at the time, who I had to be there to be able to support him as well. But I knew it was important for me to manage my own grief in order to be able to support him as best I could. So I managed it through being very open about it. A few years before Simon had died, I'd started talking about my grief from my father dying, about my own mental health issues. And I found that every time I shared a story, it resonated with so many people and it almost gave them permission to talk about their own experiences. They felt like, you know, they weren't alone in what they were going through. So for me, when Simon died, being very open about it, sharing the stories of grief, sharing all the emotions, sharing the laughs and the memories, as well as, you know, the vulnerabilities and the sadness, that was a huge part of me processing my grief. And for me, over the last 7.5 years, sharing, speaking, writing, traveling, learning about grief and, you know, positive psychology and the way that we can use that has been part of my healing and my managing of grief.
I think I'm sort of similar in that I would talk about my late dad a lot, you know, and I talk about him to lots of different people, close to me or not close to me, quite a lot as well. But I really find that helps, Tabby.
Absolutely. It really does. It's so important that we share because, you know, we are storytellers by nature. You go back in time and it's always been about telling stories and passing stories on. And it's so important that we share stories of our experiences, but also the people of past. We want to keep their memories alive. You know, they had such a valid place in this world and had made such a great impression on so many people. It's so important to keep all those things alive.
When you say to people that you're happier as a widow, what reaction typically do you tend to get?
Well, I thought when I did my TED talk, which was called Widowhood Made Me Happier, I really thought it was going to get quite a lot of resistance as a title.
Yeah.
But actually, whilst there's that initial, kind of intake of air and can you say that? And then when I explain it, it actually people go, oh, I get it. It's about giving yourself permission to choose how you feel. And it's not exclusive to grief. It's, you know, for anyone at any stage of their life. And really, the reaction to it has been so supportive, especially from other widows who go, yeah, I get it. And there are some widows who are, you know, I don't know how I can go on, because they haven't been able to open themselves up yet to the reality of how life looks without their loved one. But for what I have found is so many people that are grieving have gone, I get it. I don't know how to do it. Mm. I don't know how to choose happiness yet, but I get that it is a possibility. And that's what I want to be able to do through this, you know, is tell people it is possible to choose happiness. It is possible for emotions to coexist. You can be crying one second and laughing the next second. And that is the beauty and duality of emotions. But you get to choose what you want to do and how you want to feel. And then you can take the actions towards that.
I always think, you know, as the adult child of a widow, you know, that it's remarkable how your relationship with your parents changes. You know, and it was in your own case, maybe your son, maybe he's that little bit younger, but it does change because you constantly look at your parents now in a different way. Maybe I feel nearly like, I don't mean I'm becoming the mother, but there is that sense of role reversal around, you probably worry about them a little more or you know, you become quite concerned with, are they happy because they're widowed?
Absolutely. And I definitely felt that when I was, you know, 16 years old and my dad died, and I did feel that role reversal. You know, I became almost like the carer in the situation. I looked after my mum. She struggled. And our stories as widows are so different. So my mum met her now husband 6 months, you know, started dating 6 months after my dad had died. And they've been together now for, you know, nearly 30 years and that's super. But for me, that's not right for me. But what I was really conscious of is how I had felt such a burden and a responsibility as a teenager to look after my mom. I was so adamant that I cannot do that to my son. And this has to be we have to grieve in our own ways, but we also have to have a shared experience of grief as well. And I don't want him to feel responsible for me any more than he would have done or, you know, if both parents were still alive.
And I'm sure he doesn't, you know, and it's funny because I know my own mother wouldn't think that, you know, of me, but I suppose we probably do spend more time together now as a result of the fact that she is widowed, or even that be holidays or a weekend away or something, because I'm more mindful of the fact that he's not there. It's a really interesting conversation, Tabby. I've no doubt it resonates with a lot of our listeners. The email, as always, if you want to get in touch, is lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. For the moment, though, psychologist and author Tabby Kerwin. Tabby, thanks a million for sharing your story with us.
Thanks for having me.
Text from this listener says, I'm actually so glad that you're talking about being a widow and widowers in the show today, because it's a very lonely and difficult experience. Often people disappear after the funeral. It'd be wonderful to have more supports in this area because the grief is insurmountable and painful, says this listener. Venetia Quick is a broadcaster and host of the Grief Pod podcast. Venetia, you can relate to Tabby. Is it 8 years now since you became a widow?
Yeah, actually 2018 as well.
Oh, is it? I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, no, so it seems to have been quite the year for a lot of people. So 8 years, February the 11th, 2018, Martin, my husband, passed away again, short illness.
Yeah. Sorry to hear that.
5 months. Yeah. So.
And nothing can prepare you, Venetia, for, you know, I suppose, becoming a widow. Like, it's.
Yeah, I mean, I think in our situation, I mean, Martin was only 49. And I was 44. So, and our kids were pretty young, like they were 12, 7 and 5. So I suppose it all happened very quickly. He was diagnosed in September. And then they sort of said, like, it was at best 5 years. So that's what we were working with. And then he got 5 months.
And that's very, very difficult for you and the kids to try and adapt to that. And particularly given how young he was and how young the children were as well at the time. Yeah. You know, looking back, Venetia, you know, if you were advising people now, right, that are recently maybe widowed, and I can come to some of the messages in a moment, but as a starting point, what would you say to people? How do they navigate this?
Well, I think, to be very honest, as Tabby was saying, everybody's different and everybody grieves differently, and no grief, like grief isn't linear, and it's, you know, everybody has their own moments. Some people, especially the first year, when you're looking back on it, the majority of people will say they don't even remember it. It's a blur. It just, you sort of go through the motions, you carry through, and it's actually the second year that hits more, because I suppose then, you know, it's not this time last year. It's not the first birthday without the person. It's not the first wedding anniversary. It's not the first birthday your child's had without your partner or your husband or your wife. So I suppose there's that, but also a lot of the support can drop off in the second year because, you know, people move on, lives move forward. You're trying to move forward, you know, especially if you've kids for their sake, because their lives do go on. And that's really important that, you know, you keep things going for them as much as possible. So I think really it's just taking every day as it comes, step by step, and also having the support system around you.
Yeah. Did you have supports in terms of family and friends?
Yeah, I mean, like, I have amazing friends. I can't, like, they've literally, I mean, as Tabby was saying as well, it is interesting. There are people who you think are going to be practically move in with you and you won't get rid of, but they can be the ones that disappear as well. But then as time goes on, you understand that they're dealing with their grief in their own way, because they may have been a friend of the person or whatever. And it's just as difficult for them. And again, that's how they deal with it, by not being perhaps around as much. But I think one of the things I would say is don't be afraid to ask for help.
I think we probably are afraid, aren't we, to kind of.
Yeah, well, I know, like, certainly in the first year I was in it, I'll pick up, you know, this kid, or I'll do this or I'll do that. And I'd be very much, oh, no, I'm grand, I'll do it. Or, you know, oh, sure, we're fine. And then the second year you start to go, actually, would you mind? Or do you remember you said you'd be able to take them overnight? Mm-hmm. Could you do it this weekend? You know, and I think that's the thing, is just not being afraid to ask for help, but also for the people who are supporting in the supporting group or network of the person who's grieving, they play a huge role. And I think for them to know what to do is every bit as important. And it could be something as simple as just, you don't need to pick up the phone every day, just send the odd text. It doesn't have to be on a birthday or anniversary.
Actually realise that you become very fortunate. You're very lucky if you have good friends. It's remarkable, you know, that the people, they're all there in the aftermath and around the wake and the funeral. And you start to see so many just drop off, you know, because they have their own lives, you know, and that's completely fair as well.
Yeah, like, people move on. I mean, I was having this conversation with someone on the podcast actually about 2 weeks ago that, you know, when you lose somebody and everybody's devastated, and, you know, there's a thing on, say, social media, for example, where they turn their profile picture black, and, you know, that might be there for a month, but then they might change their picture back to them on holidays or at a rugby match or whatever. And you might think, oh no, they've forgotten them. They're moving on. They're moving forward. Yeah. But, you know, it's little things, I suppose, that you sort of notice as the grieving person, but you've got to, you do understand as time goes on that life moves on, you know?
Listener says, I have amazing friends, but the majority of my family haven't picked up the phone or text since my husband's funeral after a sudden death. That's very difficult for that listener. Cathy Stritch from Grief Ireland is with me here on the programme. Cathy, what's your advice to people that are maybe recently widowed?
Yeah, you know, I've listened to both ladies there, and you know, I think to echo what they're saying, that each person's experience is so unique. It's so different, the situation. Some people might have children, other people might not. I think it's so important that they seek out other people who get it and who understand. I know my own sister lost her husband, and I used to hear her say that my friends are amazing, but they go home to their partner at the end of the day. Yeah. You know, she sadly passed away herself after that. But that's why I kind of do the work I do now, to bring people together. And I see huge power in people who've lost a spouse coming together. I have groups of people who are friends from meeting each other through the retreats that I do in the workshops. They set up WhatsApp groups, they go for dinner. I think the spousal loss affects every part of your life. You know, it's the, what do we have for breakfast? what picture did my child draw today? No one else cares. It's that relationship that affects every part of your day from start to finish. So the loneliness and the isolation there is huge. So for those who are just new to it, it's really hard to go out into the world and speak to people who don't understand it. Mm-hmm. You might have support in friends, in workplace, in family, but they don't understand it at the end of the day. And there is nothing like sitting down with somebody who goes, I totally get what you're saying, you know?
I always think holidays are a night away or a weekend or something like that. I always think, Cathy, that's where it can be very difficult for somebody who is widowed. And even, you know, if they don't have maybe other family or children to go with them, like, that's got to be very hard.
Oh, absolutely. You know, even things like going to a wedding, you know, to have to receive that invite in the post plus one, you know, it's all of the time. I do workshops and I had a man at one of the workshops who lost his wife. And he said to me, this is the least alone I have felt in a crowded room, because he was around people who were all widowed or had yeah. lost their person as well. So it's like that thing of you go to a wedding or an occasion, but you're so lonely because the only person in the world that you want is not there. So again, it's to try and seek out people who get that.
Listener says, my dad died 40 years ago. I was a child. His name was never spoken of again to this day. Even if his name was mentioned, I cry like a child again. I wish grief was spoken about back then more and that his memories were alive. I thought your speaker was an inspiration to listen to today. And another listener, Venetia, has got in touch to say, I'm recently widowed with four young children. They're 5 to 13 in age. After my husband's death to a short-lived pancreatic cancer diagnosis, this lady has actually given me so much hope. I ultimately want to choose joy and happiness for both myself and my children, and thankfully I have so much support that I think, you know, maybe in the future I will. So I just wanted to say thanks for having her on. What would you say, Venetia, to that listener?
Well, first of all, that I'm thinking of her, yeah. like, this is, it is incredibly, I think, when you do, having kids when you've lost, when you're widowed, is a blessing in one way, because you have to get up in the morning, you have to go to the supermarket, you have to keep going. But on the other hand, it can be very hard watching them going through their grief and, you know, seeing them sad and doing their birthdays without. I mean, it's little things actually like that, because, you know, when you're having your baby, the only people in the room are you, your partner and the gynae. So on their birthdays, it's like you've no one to share that absolute memory with anymore, because that person is gone. But I think, you know, her kids will be okay. I mean, I won't use the word resilient, because that just drives me nuts
yeah,
every time.
I
heard it when Martin died. But like, you know, this morning I bought my middle son. He was 7 when Martin died. He's 16 now. This morning I bought him off to the airport. He's going off to Spain for 2 months at the end of TY. You know, they do come through it
yeah.
and they do, you know, realize their dreams, I guess, as well. And they do get on with life. And of course, but they grieve the same as us as well. So this, they could be totally fine 1 minute, and then out of nowhere, a few years down, it can come out again.
Cathy, just very finally, the listener says, Widows Ireland is an amazing group. If people, Cathy, want to get in touch with yourselves at Grief Ireland today, where can they do that?
So, yeah, I have on all the social media channels. My podcast is called Family Flowers Only. I speak to loads of people who've lost partners and all types of loss. But griefireland.com is my website. I'm doing a spousal loss retreat weekend very soon, actually.
Okay. So it might be something maybe for people that are, you know, looking to be surrounded by those in a similar position or situation to them. Cathy, thanks a million. Cathy Stritch there from Grief Ireland, and Venetia Quick, broadcaster and host of the Grief Pod podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. Tabby Kerwin with us at the very start of the programme as well. Our own email if you want to get in touch. There's actually remarkable the number of people getting in touch about this today. We might come back to it tomorrow on the programme. If you want to share your own story or experience, it's lunchtimelive@newstalk.com.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.